Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 14 lines from the bottom of Daf Kuf Yud Beis. If you prefer, the second to last narrow line of the Gemara. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance in the margin where we have a topic heading that we call the Nosei, and it reads as follows: Mi Mosai, from when? Chal Chiyuv Oinsin al Hashoyel. A Shoyel is someone who borrows an item. His level of responsibility for the welfare of the item and obligation to return the item is very high. He is obligated to compensate the owner of the item if it is stolen and if it's lost, certainly if he behaved with negligence, and even if the disappearance of the item or destruction thereof or damage thereto took place as a result of something called oinsin, something beyond his control, he nevertheless must return a complete item, that which he borrowed, to the owner. At what point does this high level of responsibility set in? Number one, Mishas Hashela, from the very point in time that he borrowed it, that he took it. Mishas Oines, or from the point in time that the Oness happened. You will see in the Gemara how there is a difference in practical terms as to what point in time we obligate the Shoel in this responsibility. Lefi Rav Papa, according to Rav Papa, Chiyuv Ha'oinsin Chal B'Shas Ha'oines V'lo B'Shas Hashela, the obligation upon the borrower starts at the point of the onus, the point of, let's say, ruination or destruction that happened beyond his control, and not at the point of the initial borrowing. But Gemara Yeshnei L'Shoinais, within the Gemara itself, there will be two versions. Im lahamid Rava kiraf papa oilo. Rava will make a statement at the opening of today's Gemara, and we will analyze whether Rava is in conjunction with or parallels Rav Papa's way of thinking or not. If you say that Rava does not parallel Rav Papa, then, according to Rava, the obligation sets in, the obligation to compensate, even under ones circumstances, from the initial point of borrowing and not from the later point when the destruction takes place. So now let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara opens up with a long point made by Rava. Hence, you see we've used a long marking indicating that it's Rava's speech. Then, at the end of that long point, the Gemara on the third wide line will say that Iko demasni lo aresha, Iko demasni lo asefa. Some take one of the phrases of Rava to reflect on the opening remark, and some on the closing remark, the latter remark. And in accordance with that, we will then determine whether Rava is along the lines of Rav Papa. The initial observation is no, that Rava is not along Rav Papa's lines, and the second observation, the second version, is that he is. Now, I know that all of that sounds quite abstract, and we'll appreciate it much more once we get into the Gemara. I just want to point out that Rav Papa, who's been cited up till now orally, doesn't appear in the Gemara until after we make the presentation of Rava. And if you look in your Mark Gemaras, you'll notice that Rav Papa, his name is underlined with a, we'll say, a three-line long marking for Rav Papa. So it's the order of presenting things might seem a bit unconventional. That's why we mentioned Rav Papa's point of view at the outset, that according to Rav Papa, the chiyuv oinsin, the obligation that rests upon the shoel, the borrower, his high level of obligation sets in at the time of the ones, and not at the time of the initial borrowing. Now, the Gemara. Omar Rava, hiniach lohem aviem parashula, a man died, leaving in his possession a borrowed cow. Now there are heirs. Mishtamshin ba kol yemei shelasa. They can use it till the end of the borrowing time. If the father borrowed an animal for 30 days, and after 15 days the father died, so there's another 15 days left to the borrowing period during which they can use it. Mesa, if during that time the animal dies. Death of a borrowed animal is in the realm of ones. If it dies, ein chayovin ba'on seha. They are not obligated to compensate for that. If the father was alive, the initial borrower was, so he would be obligated because he, as the borrower, is obligated to compensate even for ones. They are not the borrowers of it. So they are not obligated in the oinsin. But we see an interesting halacha, that even though they are not the borrowers, they have a right to continue using it until the end of the borrowing period. Kisvurin shel avihen hi. They, the heirs, thought that the animal was their father's. They didn't realize that it was a borrowed animal. V'tavchua, they slaughtered it. V'achlua, and they ate it. They ate the meat. Mishalman de mei boser bezoiled. They pay for the meat at a rate that we called in the Gemara de mei boser bezoil, which literally means the cheap rate for meat, which is understood to mean 2/3 of the going rate. So they pay the 2/3 rate for the meat. And now we have another statement of Rava, which the Gemara will ask, what is it related to? But the statement says, "Hiniach lem aviyim achrayas nechasim chayovin l'shalem." If the father died leaving property, so then they are obligated to pay. What of Rava's comments? We have Rava the Reisha. We've written this in between the lines. You can see very clearly Rava's ratio statement, and then the Seifa statement. This last point, the father left property. They have to compensate. Ika demasni lo a ratio. There are those that have it as a continuation of the ratio, where the animal died, so we said that the children are not obligated to compensate. However, if those children inherited from their father, who was the borrower, they inherited land, then the land is the guarantor, so to speak, and they have to pay from the land that they inherited. That is an approach taking this last phrase and attaching it to the resha. V'ika demasni lo aseifa. And there are those that attach it to the seifa, where they slaughtered the animal. If there was land that they inherited from their father, then the full rate would be paid from the land. Man demasni lo arisha. He who teaches this closing statement of hiniach lem aviyim achrayas nechasim on the resha, kol shekein aseifa upliga derav papa. If you take this point of land inheritance results in compensation as a comment on the resha, that would indicate that the obligation to compensate for the death sets in from the initial borrowing time. And if that be the case, then all the more so on the Seifa, where they proactively slaughtered the animal. They slaughtered an animal concerning which the obligation of onus already had set in from the initial borrowing time. Well, that approach is at odds with Rav Papa. That's Upliga the Rav Papa, who will appear shortly. Man demasni lo aseifa, he who associates the closing point of Rava as a continuation of the Seifa, where they proactively slaughtered the animal, aval areshalo, in the case of the animal simply dying on them, where they didn't do anything proactively, they would not be obligated to pay with the land. V'hainu d'Rav Papa, that approach, where the obligation sets in only from the point that they proactively slaughtered the animal, but not from the initial borrowing time, that is something that Rav Papa would agree with. That's like Rav Papa. Before we go on, where the Gemara will actually present Rav Papa, let us take a look at the Rashi. The Rashi that we'll start with is toward the end of the narrow lines of the Rashi commentary, six lines before they start getting wide. Aresha. The Ka'omar Mesa, where the Resha taught the animal had died, simply died, not that the heirs slaughtered it, just died. Ein Chayav and Boin Seha, they are not obligated to compensate for that. But if their father left land, chayovin l'shalim, then they would have to pay from the land. The land became obligated to cover their father's debts from his lifetime. If you take Rava's statement of hiniach le'maviyim af chayes nechosim and attach it to the ratio, then Rava comes out holding that chiyuv oinsin, the chiyuv to compensate for ones, starts mishas sheila mutal al shel, from the initial borrowing time, not from when the ones happened, but from when he initially took possession of the borrowed item. Upliga de Rav Papa, that approach is at odds with Rav Papa. Yomer l'kamon l'romi chiyuv oinsin ashel ad shas she teones. According to Rav Papa, the obligation to compensate for ones sets in only at the actual time of the ones. V'ika demasni lo aseifa. There are those that understand Rava's comment regarding the land being used to compensate as a continuation of the seifa. Tavchua v'yachlua, where the heirs slaughtered and ate the meat. Misham de mebosar bezol. We said that they would pay the cheap rate for the meat. V'miniach lemaviyam karka mishamin piron shalem. If, however, the father left land, they would pay in full from the land. Tehavu'inu b'mokoyim avuhon. V'hoyol v'hein achlua mishalmin. They are instead in the place of their father, and since they ate it, they have to pay. Avol, areisho demesa kedarka lo, but as far as the animal simply dying, they would not be obligated. The lo amrina nishtabin nechosim. We don't say that the properties become bound. The lo rami chiyuv onsin al hashoyel ad shas onsin. The obligation of a shoyel to pay sets in only at the time of the ones. V'hacha in the resha ki isnisa, where the ones took place, where it died. Lese la shoyel. The shoyel is not around anymore. The father died already. V'hani lo kibul alayu midi. They, the children, didn't accept upon themselves shoyel obligations. So now that approach, Vahainu the Rav Papa, that is in accordance with Rav Papa. Where do we see Rav Papa holding thusly? That the chiyuv of ones sets in upon a shoel only at the time of the ones happening and not from the initial borrowing time. Where do we see that in Rav Papa? So now we go back to the Gemara text. The Omar Rav Papa. Now Rav Papa, you'll notice we have little numbers 1 and 2 in diamonds. The number 1 we've put in brackets. You can see the two lines of Gemara in brackets. We want to focus really on the number 2 comment of his, which deals with borrowing. We're going to speak about borrowing and the slaughtering of an animal and Shabbos. Let's see how it all comes together. So being that we pointed out the structure, that the first din is less relevant to us, we'll read the Gemara, but focusing on the second point. Number 1, Hoysa para genuva lo. A person had stolen a cow. V'tovcha b'Shabbos, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Slaughtering a stolen animal in general results in the thief paying 4 times its value, or 5 times its value. In the case of a cow, he would pay 5 times its value. We're saying here he is going to be obligated to pay that multiple payment. Shekvar chayav b'gneva kodim shiyavo lidei isur Shabbos. The obligation for compensating for the theft set in before Shabbos set in. So there was already a financial obligation on the thief for the theft. The principal theft payment was already upon him. So once there's a principal payment obligation on the thief from before Shabbos, we can actually impose the multiple payments even though he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Generally speaking, where a financial obligation sets in upon an offender simultaneous with a Shabbos violation, he would be innocent because the Shabbos violation carries with it a more severe penalty, namely stoning, a death penalty. And that which carries with it a greater penalty, incorporates or includes within it the financial obligation. So he would not have to pay the money. However, here, the financial obligation set in before Shabbos, from the point that he stole it. Now, we continue with the second point, which is more relevant to our discussion. Hoysapara she'ula lo. A man had borrowed an animal from before Shabbos. V'tovcha b'Shabbos. And he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Now the act of slaughtering of a borrowed animal is basically tantamount to an act of theft. He had borrowed it from before Shabbos. He slaughtered it on Shabbos. Potter, he is exempt from the financial payments, and we don't say that he had an obligation to compensate. From before this moment, we don't say that he had an obligation to compensate from the point that he actually borrowed it. In this particular case, we say he's exempt from the financial payment. The Shabbos violation and the theft, in this case his slaughtering of a borrowed animal is the theft, are happening simultaneously. They're happening on Shabbos. The theft is happening on Shabbos, in effect. And we mentioned a moment before that when you have a severe offense happening simultaneously with the financial obligation, the offender is exempted from paying for the financial loss. What do we see concerning Rav Papa? Well, we see very clearly that a borrower's obligation sets in from the time of the destruction of the item. not from the initial borrowing time. Let's now go over that point in the Rashi on the fourth wide line where we left off before. V'hainu de Rav Papa d'yomar hoysa paro genuva lo, klomar gonav paro me'erev Shabbos. Person had stolen a cow from before Shabbos, v'tovach b'Shabbos, slaughtered it on Shabbos. Chayv af b'tashum arba b'chamisha. He is obligated in that multiple payment. Sharei nischayv b'keren kodim shevali de'isur skila. He became obligated in the principal payment before the isur skila, the Shabbos violation, which mandates a person being stoned. Let's now go to the next line of Rashi at the end of the line. We have the case of a man borrowing an animal. It was in his possession through Shabbos, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos. He's exempt from all payment. We do not say, says Rav Papa, Mishas Sheila Mechayev Leakarna. That from the point of borrowing, he becomes obligated for the principal, and it's in his domain, even with regard to the effects of the angel of death, namely, even with regard to the death of the animal. Not so. The obligation does not set in from the initial borrowing time. Elo bishas tvicha hu de gazle. Rather, obligation sets in from the time of the destruction of the animal. In this case, from the time of the slaughtering of the animal, that is when he, in effect, steals it. The Iser Shabbos ugneva boim kecha v'niftar min hakeren mishum dekom leba deraba minei. And the Shabbos and theft violation happen simultaneously. He's therefore exempt even from the principal on the grounds of he gets the more severe punishment, death. That having been said, we have a clear picture of Rav Papa's approach to a shoel's obligations. Therefore, Rava's comment of the land being a source of full payment for what happened, well, if Rava's comment of land being source of full payment applies to the Reisha statement of Rava, where the animal simply died in their domain, and the full compensation would have to be made from the land, that would show that the obligation set in from the initial borrowing time, when their father borrowed the animal. The obligation to compensate set in at that point. That's not like Rav Papa. However, if the obligation to pay from the land that Rava mentioned is a continuation of the Seifa alone, where they destroyed the animal, and if there is land, they'll have to pay from the land full compensation, that would be along the lines of Rava's teaching. Tonu Rabbonon, V'heshiv es hagzela asher gozal. The Pasuk says that the thief shall return the item he stole. Ma tam alom asher gozal. What does the Torah gain by adding the words asher gozal? Would it not have been sufficient for the Pasuk to simply say v'heshiv es hagzela, and you shall return the item of theft? What is adding that you stole? Isn't that obvious once you term it a gezela? Yachsir kein shegozal. So we are taught that the Torah expects you to return it as it was. What does that mean in practical terms? Mikan omru hagozel machiles bonov p'turin milishalem. From here we see that a person who stole an item and fed it to his children, in other words, the item is no longer around, and the thief has since died, the children are exempt from returning, from compensating. Now Rashi points out three lines from the bottom. We'll read it together. Ke'ein shegozal klomar. It means to say, im gezela kayemes, if the stolen item is still around after the father died, and his children have the stolen item in their possession, yachzir, it must be returned. Avol ein gezela kayemes poter. If the stolen item is no longer around, it's not, as the source said, ke'ein shegozal, it's not as it was as at the time of theft, poter, they are exempt from returning. The pasuk, as you can see, the asher gozal is an instruction not regarding the thief himself. That was clear from the heshev as agzela. The asher gozal is an instruction directed at the children. So if the item is around, so then those children, the heirs, must return the stolen item. If it has been consumed, they are exempt. Obviously, if the thief was still around, the fact that the stolen item is not around doesn't exempt him from paying for his crime, compensating for the lost item, for the stolen item. But he's since passed away. So who, as far as the children are concerned, then we see this scriptural ruling, Asher Gozal. If it's around, the item, stolen item is extant, the children, return it. If not, they're exempt. Hiniach lifnehem. He left a stolen item present. Bein gedolim, bein ktanim chayovin. Whether the children are adult or even if they're minors, they have to return it. Mishum sumchus amru, in the name of sumchus it was said, gedolim chayovim ktanim pturin. Adults are obligated to return it. Minors are not obligated to return. And now we have an incident. Bar Chamua de Rebbe Yirmiya, the son of Rebbe Yirmiya's father-in-law, most likely his Rebbe Yirmiya's brother-in-law. This particular incident, we're dealing with a minor. This Bar Chamua was a kotten, was a minor. Torak goli biape de Rebbe Yirmiya. Literally, it means he closed the door in the face of Rebbe Yirmiya. What is the necessary background to appreciate this? You see this in the Rashi, second line from the bottom. Torak goli. Goli is a door. Deles psucha, an open door that it was beves oviv in his father's house. Sogar, that's torak. He closed it. V'loiniach likones, thereby preventing Yirmiya from entering. Why all of this? Lefi shehoya roitze Rebbe Yirmiya lahachzik bo. Rebbe Yirmiya wanted to take possession of the house. Now Rebbe Yirmiya had a claim. His claim was that he had bought that house from the father, from the deceased. Or he had a claim that the father had given him the house. So Rebbe Yirmiya was interested in taking possession of that which he felt was rightfully his. In the meantime, this minor prevented Rebbe Yirmiya from taking possession. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Also, lekamei de Rebbe Yovan. The case came to Rebbe Yovan. Omar, Rebbe Yovan said, Sheloi hu tovea. Rebbe Yovan said that the child was claiming that which is his, which is his own. Omar le, Rebbe Yirmiya said, what do you mean the child is claiming that which is his own? I am going to bring witnesses that I took possession of it in the lifetime of his father. In other words, as we said before, Rebbe Yirmiya had a claim that the father had sold it to him, and here Rebbe Yirmiya is saying, and I can actually bring witnesses that I took possession of it during the father's lifetime. Omar Lei, Rebbe Yovan says, it's very nice that you can bring witnesses, but we have a technical problem. V'chi mekablin edim, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Sheloi b'fnei baal din, do we accept witnesses in the absence of the other litigant, in this case, the child, is like he's not there. He's a minor. He doesn't have the necessary level of intelligence to participate in a legal dispute. So it's as if he's not there. So Rabbi Yovan is saying, since when do we accept witnesses to testify on behalf of one side when the other side is not there? The Gemara asks, Velo, is that so that we don't accept witnesses when the other litigant is not there? V'hokotoni, bein gedolim, bein ketanim chayovin. Notice we dashed the line ketanim chayovin, that if there is a stolen item that is extant and the thief is no longer there, he died, the children must return it, including minors. Amalei, Rabbi Yovan responds, Hare machlekes sumchis bitzidcha. There's a dissenting opinion next to that which you are citing, namely the opinion of sumchis, who says that ketanim, minors, are exempt. Omar, so Rav Yirmiya said, Ichbal kulei alma v'koi kesumchis lafkuyun l'didi. The whole world goes out of its way to cause me a loss. You're citing a singular opinion, like a minor opinion, a singular opinion, to cause me a loss. As far as I am concerned, the Rabbanan rule, even ketanim, have to return that which is not theirs. In the meantime, the matter rolled around and reached the attention of Rabbi Avo. Omar, and Rabbi Avo said, Lo shmia l'chuha de Rav Yosef bar Chama omer Rabbo Shaya? Did you not hear Rav Yosef's teaching? The omer of Yosef bar Chama omer Rabbo Shaya? Tinoik shetokaf b'avodov. V'yorad l'soich soda shel chaveru v'yomar shelihu. A child who took over someone's slaves and went into someone else's field and declared, it's mine. We don't say, well, let's wait until he becomes an adult. We take it from him, from the minor, from the child, immediately. Sounds like we're going in favor of Rabbi Yirmiyah's claim. And when he becomes adult, let him bring witnesses, and then we'll see if it was his. So that would appear to then go in favor of Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Gemara asks, Mi Domi, is that citation of Rabbi Yosef bar Chama parallel? Hasam hu demafkinon minei, there we will take it away from the miner, where he grabs someone's slaves and went into someone's field. Delo kaimo le chazoka davo. He had no previous basis of claim through his father. Avol hecho di is le chazoka davo lo. But where a child is coming on the heels of the possession of his father of that item, in this case, Yirmiyah's father-in-law owned the house. That particular man's son, true, he's a minor, has a claim by virtue of his father having owned the house. So, in a case like that, where there's a chazoka davua, where the child has the claim of having of his father having owned it at one point, well, we wouldn't take it away from him. On the side of the Gemara, under our topic heading, we have a comment, an introductory remark, where we've written, Kabbalas Eidim Shelo Bifnei Baldin. We made reference to this earlier, accepting witnesses in a financial litigation before the opponent is present. The Gemara, Omar of Yirmiyah, Omar of Shapsai, Mekablenim Shelo Bifnei Baldin. He declares you can accept witnesses even though the other litigant is not present. Tohi bo Rabbi Yochanan v'chi Mekablim Eidim Shelo Bifnei Baldin. Rabbi Yochanan heard this comment and he was stupefied. Is it possible that you would accept witnesses that would testify against the other party's claim even though that other party is not present? How can this Rav Ashi Omar Rav Shabsai state such a teaching, such a ruling that we do accept witnesses Shelo Bifnei Baal Din? Kibla Minei Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Rabbi Yossi was willing to accept that rather unusual ruling if there are exceptional circumstances. And here we have three possible cases. Kegoin Shoyahu Choyle, where the litigant that's present is sick, he has witnesses that will testify in his behalf. He is currently very sick, and if you don't accept them now, he might die. Oh, Edov Cholim, or the witnesses themselves are deathly ill. And if you don't listen to what they say and you're going to wait for the other litigant to be present, they might die and you'll never hear the testimony. Oh, Shohoyu Edov Mivakshim Leuch Dinasayam Visholchu Lo Velo Ba. Or you have a situation where the witnesses need to travel. They had sent a message to the other party and he hasn't come. And what are you going to do? You're going to delay these witnesses for how long? They need to leave. So in a case like that where the other party was summoned and didn't show and these witnesses need to leave, we will listen to what they have to say even though the other party is not there. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Mekablim Edim Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. Here you have Shmuel ruling along the lines of what we saw just before, that we accept witnesses even though the other party, the other litigant, is not present. Omar Mar Ukva L'Difer Shemineh De Shmuel. Or Ukva says it was explained to me by Shmuel Kegoin De Poschule Bedine. They opened a court case. And they summoned that party to come and he didn't come. But if they didn't start the case, Motzi Omarle, the other litigant, can say, I insist on going to the great court in the land of Israel. Ihachi, if that is a right that the other party has, he poshule nami motzi omale blabezin hagodol azilna. Even if they did start the case, he can resist the continuation of the present case by, handled by this court by the claim, I want to go to the great court in Israel. Omar Ravina. So Ravina explains that the point that Mar Ukva made, that once the case starts, the other party, the other litigant, cannot make that argument. Kegon de nokat diska mi based in Hagodol. That's a situation where a diska, a letter, a document, a letter was sent from the great court in Israel to handle the case over here. Now, if they themselves sent an order to handle the case here, and as you can see, they did what they were instructed to do. They started the case. And the other party is summoned and doesn't come. So then we can accept the witnesses that will testify against his cause, even though he, that particular other litigant, is not present. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. It reads, Kiyum Shtar Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. Kiyum Shtar is a verification of the authenticity of a document. And that's done through verifying the authenticity of the signatures therein. So imagine a case where you have a lender of money and a borrower. The lender has a document indicating that he extended a loan, and the lender wants to collect. He'll need to verify the signatures, and that we call Kiyum HaShtar. Now the Gemara says, Omar Rav, Mekaymen es Ashtar Shelo b'fnei Baal Din. We verify signatures in such documents, even if the other party, in this case the borrower, is not present. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Ein Mekaymen es Ashtar Shelo b'fnei Baal Din. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees, says, we do not do thusly. Omar Le, Rav Sheshes, the Rav Yossi Bar Abo, Azru of Taime, the Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Sheshes tells Rabbi Yossi, I will explain to you Rabbi Yochanan's objection. Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, V'huad b'v'olav v'lo yishmerenu. This Pasuk is in the context of the owner of a damaging ox, and Omro Torah, the Torah says, in this Pasuk, Yovel Baal Hashor V'yamor Al Shoro. Let the owner of the damaging ox be present when the testimony concerning its having done damage is offered. So that when you have a party from whom money is being claimed, that party is to be present. Otherwise, you do not accept testimony. And in this case, we were speaking about the verification of a loan document unless the borrower is present. Notice we have a long point marking. You'll notice we have a topic heading that accompanies this. On the side, we have a nosei, and it reads, Tipul Beloive Sheino Roitze L'Shalem Chovo. How do we deal with a borrower, a person who has a debt as a result of having borrowed money, and who doesn't want to pay the loan, v'toin shashtar mezuf, and he makes a claim that the document being used to collect from him is a forgery. We have also a mivne, a structural note. Now, the structural note also has this little star that we put in. You can see it's coming from beginning of our long point marking. And we explain, Simanu kenekuda aruka kol hashuros akshuros lenoseana. We've used a long marking to include all of the rows of Gemara that are related to this issue. How do we deal with someone who doesn't want to pay a debt? We have a diamond that you'll see in the Gemara text. This highlights shtoros shonim. We've written on the side different kinds of documents shekisvin neged loiva she'ena roitze l'shalem, that we will write up. The court writes up against a borrower who doesn't want to pay. How do we proceed legally with such a case? And you'll see a number of different documents are featured. And let's now go to the Gemara text. Omar Rava, Hilchasa Mekaymen es Ashtar Shelo b'fnei Baal Din. Rava rules that we will verify a document, a bill of collection, even if the one being collected from is not present. Even if he's there screaming that it's a forgery. Ve'i Omar Nikitu li Zimno ad de Maisino Sadi. If, however, he says, listen, give me some time until I bring witnesses, Umarano le Lishtora, who will be able to literally weaken the document, or testify that the document is in fact a forgery. So if he says that he's planning to do that, if the borrower says he's planning to do that, then naktinon le, we will give him that time. Also if he comes. Elo asa, if he doesn't show up with his witnesses, then natrinon le. This is an abbreviation referring to Monday, Thursday, Monday. Natrinon le, we wait a Monday, Thursday, and Monday after that time period that we offered him lapses, and he hasn't shown up. We wait an additional week, basically, Monday, Thursday, and those days, by the way, are the days that a court is in session, as we learned earlier in this Masechta. Elo Asa, if he still doesn't come, we have a borrower of money who doesn't come, doesn't show up, doesn't prove his case that the document is a forgery. So then, Kasvinon Psicha Iluya Tishin Yoimen. We write up a psicha. Now, what's a psicha? Psicha is a document indicating excommunication regarding someone who doesn't pay up his debts, and that the excommunication will set in 90 days. Talsin kamoi lo nachtina linichsei. During the first 30 days, we do not descend upon his properties. The Amor Kotorach Bezuzi Venezov. We figure he's trying to find money and to pay off the debt. Mitzioi, the middle 30 days of this 90-day period. I should say that the 90 days, according to Rashi, Psichos Eshtar Shamto, is a star of excommunication for the fact that he doesn't pay his debts. So the formal, we'll say, excommunication might in fact set in immediately, but as far as now collecting his property, so we're explaining we don't collect from him his properties in payment of the debt, not during the first 30 days. Maybe he's troubling himself to find money. The Mitzioi Nami Lo Nachtinon Le, the middle 30 days, we don't descend upon his properties. The Omar, we figure, Dilma Lo Ashkach Lemezaf, he can't find anyone from whom to borrow. The Kotorach Umazvin, and in the meantime, he's trying to find someone to buy his property so as to get money. The line just before, I didn't offer an accurate translation, but where we read at the beginning of the line just before, Kotorach Bezuzi Venezov, he was troubling himself to find money to borrow. And that you can see from here, if he wasn't successful, so during those middle 30 days, we still don't descend upon his properties to pay off the debt, because we consider maybe that a borrower is trying to find buyers for his property, and he'll use the payment that he gets for the sale of his properties to pay off his debt. Basroi, the last 30 days, Nami lo nachtinon l'nichsei, we still do not descend upon his properties and transfer them to the lender. The Omar, we figure, lokeach gufei kotorach bezuzei. Maybe the borrower actually did find a purchaser, but people don't have ready cash to pay for their purchases, so the buyer himself is trying to amass the necessary money. So as you can see, these 90 days have gone by. Lo Asa, if he still doesn't show up. Kasvinon Adrachto Anichse. Here's a new document, an Adrachto. Rashi explains, the Rashi that we're looking at is about a little bit more than halfway down the Rashi commentary. Psak din, Rashi says, it's a court ruling. Leiret hamalve l'soich nechosim shel loive v'litlom b'shumo b'chovo. A court ruling entitling the lender to descend upon the borrower's properties and to essentially take the properties, assuming that there is a formal assessment made of their value. So it's a court ruling entitling the lender to, we'll say, start taking action. Let's read that again. Kasvinon Adrachto Anichse. After those 90 days went by and the borrower did not show up, we write an Adrachto concerning the borrower's properties. Vahani mili diomar asina. And this, all of this is true. All of this, we'll say, this delay approach is true when the borrower is claiming, I'm coming. Avol omar lo asina. If he says at the outset, I'm not coming, lialter kasvinon, we will write this up immediately. Vahani mili bemilve. And everything we've described till now is a procedure when you're dealing with a borrower and his need to pay up the loan. Aval bepikadoin, when it comes to a bailee entrusted with an item to watch, and he's not coming up with it when the owner says, give it back to me, la'alter kasvinan, then we will write up the document immediately. The thinking being that the bailee is expected to have the item given to him extant. It's not like someone who borrows money where we say milva lahitsanitna, borrowed money was assumed to have been spent immediately and it's really not around, and we have to accommodate the borrower in trying to get together the funds. Here, the bailee, the one asked to watch the item, ought to have it available immediate demand. If it's not around, we immediately will descend upon his properties for collection. V'chi kasvinon, the Gemara continues, when we write an adrachta concerning the borrower's properties, amikarkoi, we write up this document concerning his land, aval amitapeli lo. But as far as portables are concerned, not so. The Dilma Shomit the Ochiluhu Malvel Mitatali, we're afraid that if we would entitle the lender to collect portables, he might in fact collect them and use them up. Vechi Osi Loive Umaisi Sahadi Umeira Le Lishtara, and when the Love, the borrower, eventually comes up, brings his witnesses and demonstrates that the shtar, that the bill of collection, was a forgery, lo mashkich midi the mikvah, there won't be anything left to collect from the malva who wrongfully collected from the love. That would be true if the malva collected portables, but if the malva collected land, land is there. It always remains, and if he took over the land improperly, we will restore ownership of the land to the Lova if, in fact, he demonstrates the invalidity of the shtar. The e is lay mekarkoi lamalve kasvinon. Another qualification: if the malve has his own properties, then we will write a shtara drachta concerning the portables of the love. That would what's the point here? Because the fear that we had just before of the malva wrongfully consuming the metaltalin, leaving no means of compensation for the love, would not be true. Here the malva's property would be available to use to compensate the borrower if this in fact happened. However, the Gemara rejects this very last point, Velohi, and this is not so. Adrachta metatli lo kasvinon afalgav di isle mekarkoi. The Adrachta document will not be written against the borrower's portables, even if the lender has properties. Chayshinon shemo tachsif. We're afraid that that lender might allow his properties to go bad, and they will lose all value, so that when the borrower demonstrates that the loan collection was unjustified, and we want to compensate that borrower for the wrongful taking of the portables, we won't be able to properly compensate him from land that went bad, that land that was owned by the lender that he allowed to go bad. V'chi kasvinon adrachto, and when we write up this adrachto document, mod'inon lei, we inform the borrower that we're going to do so. V'hani mili demikrav, that's true, that we insist on informing him, that's if he's within the vicinity, he's nearby. Avol mirchak lo, if he's not near, so then not so. V'ir mirchak, and if he's at a distance, v'ika krovim, hinami ika shayarta de'azli v'osu hasam, if he is distant, and there are krovim, krovim would most likely be their relatives that would inform him, or there are caravans that travel to that distant location, then where the borrower is located. Mashina le tresa yarchishosa, then we will delay the adrachta 12 months. Ad ozlo vi osi shayarta, enough time for the caravan to go and come back that distance. Kihad Ravina Shaha Lamor Acha Tresa Yarchi Shasa, a case involving Ravina, where he delayed an adrachta writing. Now this Mar Acha had a claim against someone, and Ravina delayed the writing of the adrachta 12 months. Ad de Ozla Vasyo Shayarta Mibechozoib, leaving enough time for the caravan to travel and come back from Beis Chozoi. Beis Chozoi is the name of a distant location. The Gemara, though, rejects what we just said and says, Velohi, there isn't an expectation of delaying that much time. Hasam Inish Alimo Have. There, you were dealing with a malva, a collector that was a tough individual. Ihavya Matra Adrachta Liodei, if he would get a hold of the Adrachta, Lohava Efshe Lafuke Mine, it would be impossible to get it away from him. In other words, he would then take possession of the borrower's land, even if it's unjustified, and it would be next to impossible to recollection from him. Avol hocha, but here, when you're not dealing with a very difficult lender, lo natrinon le elo ad, we don't wait, elo ad ozil shlicha betlosa b'shabata, v'osa barbo b'shabata, ulechamisha b'shabata koi bedine. All we wait is enough time, and it's when the time for writing up the adrachta comes, we need to inform the borrower of our doing so. All, and he's not around here, we'll wait enough time for the shliach, for the agent, on a Tuesday to go. And that's what we read in the Gemara, the Ozil Shlicha B'Tlosa B'Shabbata, and the Osan come back B'Arba B'Shabbata, and come back on Wednesday, and Ulechamisha B'Shabbata, and on Thursday Koi B'Dine, he would be expected to show up in court. And if not, so we did what we were expected to do. At the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nosei, which reads, number one, Ne'emonus Shlucho de Rabbonon, the trustworthiness of a court agent. He's sent by the court to summon a defendant or a litigant. And we believe him, Loimar, when he tells us, Ploni lo roitze lovoi ledin, so-and-so doesn't want to come. Generally speaking, in order to act upon information, you would have to have two witnesses. Here we're introducing this idea that a single individual, he's the court agent, is believed to testify, to tell us, to inform us that so-and-so that was summoned does not want to come, doesn't want to show up. Number two, Hazmonas Baldin Leon Ploni Ledin. We'll speak about the summoning of an individual to show up on a particular day. Under our Mivna, our structural note, triangles will appear, and they highlight, you'll see how they highlight the expression velo amoron, which is an expression qualifying that which was said previously. These are hagbolos, restrictions, constraints, mosai, samchinon, ashlichus, noshim, ushchenim, lahazmin, ledin. Under what circumstances will we rely on the agency provided by women or neighbors to summon someone to court? Hopefully, as we get into the Gemara, these ideas will become clearer. We now turn to the Gemara, four lines from the bottom. Omar Ravina, Hai Shlucha de Rabbonon Mehemninon Le Kebetre, the court agent, we will rely upon him as if he were two witnesses. That means we give him believability. And as we said before, we will believe him when he says that so-and-so tells me that he's not coming to din after the court agent summoned him. Vahani mili l'shamta. That is true with regard to the basic excommunication. We saw this at the beginning of this section of Gemara, where someone who tells us or does not appear in court after being summoned, so he will be excommunicated. Avalapsicha, however, with regard to the document that's written up, we had a diamond around this word earlier on the second wide line of the Gemara. The writing of the document, which involves a fee to be paid to the scribe, and this defendant who doesn't want to show up, he's the one that will have to bear those costs. Kevan de mamona komichsa le de kaboy le lemesiv le zuzi le safra, since this is an issue of money payment. We're going to, michsar literally means cause a loss of money. It means we're going to charge this uncooperative litigant to pay for the document. So based on the testimony of this court agent, we're not going to end up charging him for that, for the writing up the document. Let me read that line again. The kaboy lemesiv lezuzi lesafra. Lo means we do not rely on the information provided by the court agent to thereby then obligate him to bear those costs. When it comes to money collections, you cannot collect money from someone with less than two witnesses. Omar Ravina, Yavinon Zimno Apuma di Itza Vapuma di Shivivi. The term Yavinon Zimna means summoning to court. We will summon someone to court on the word of a woman. In other words, a woman can be used as hired or as a court agent to summon someone to court to show up on a particular day. Likewise, neighbors can be hired for that purpose. And if the summoned individual does not show up, based on the summoning done by the woman or the neighbors, then that summoned individual will be subject to the shamta, to the excommunication. V'lo amoron ela delese b'masa. The law that we just taught is true if the summoned individual is not in town. Rashi says three lines from the bottom. Elo delese b'maso shein oisei ploni achsho b'ir shebeis din ba. The summoned individual right now is not in town. The omar l'shchenov k'shiyoshuv ploni imru loy lavo. And the court told the neighbors. The neighbors are the ones that are expected to summon him. The court told the neighbors, when so-and-so comes back, tell him to show up in court. So that this point of relying on the neighbors to convey the summons is true, is applicable when the defendant is not in town. We continue at the top of Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Aval Isay Bemasa Lo. If that defendant is in town, then we will not excommunicate him based on our, we'll say, reliance upon the neighbors to summon him. Why not? Might sound even a little paradoxical. Here he's in town, and we won't. The Amrinon, we figure. Amar loy omrule. We, the court, will figure that the neighbors, or the woman, they didn't carry out their agency. Why not? Why would they not have carried out their agency? The Amri, they calculated, Ashkachinhu shlicho de beizdin v'yomale. The formal court agent ran into him, found him, and he took care of it. Rashi at the top, Aval Isay b'masalo mishamtinon le. If the defendant that's being summoned happens to be in town, when we turn to the woman or the neighbors, Dano itso v'shivavi lo avdi shlichusam, they're not going to carry out that which they were requested to do. Rashi continues, the Amri shlicho de beidino ashkichev yomale, the formal court agent found him. Elo mishadrinon le od shlichus achrino basre. Rather, we will, in the case that he is in town, we'll have to send another agent to summon him. But the point is that if that defendant is in town, when we turn to the neighbors or the woman, and he doesn't show up, so that's not going to be grounds for putting him, the defendant, into excommunication. Velo amoron, and again another qualification, lo amoron, that we would rely on the neighbors or the woman, ela de lo cholif abova de beidino. The defendant is not someone who passes by the court. His travel route does not involve his passing by the court. Avacholif abova de beidino lo, but if his travel route involves his passing by the court, we're not going to rely on the woman or the neighbors for acting as the agents. Amri, these agents will figure, Ashkechu Abedino of Amri Le, the court themselves ran in and found him and summoned him. We don't have to bother doing that. Let's look at Rashi, three lines from the top. V'lo amoran ela de lo cholif abova de beidino ki osahu ploni lebeise. When that defendant has to go, eventually comes home, les le urcha lebova de beidina. He doesn't have as his route passing by the court. Avacholif abova de beidina, if he has to pass by the court. And here, once again, we're talking about a case where we would have turned to the woman or the neighbors because the defendant was out of town. However, even though he's out of town, but he would pass by the court en route to his house, lo samchinon ashivavi, we're not going to rely on the neighbors, the Amri, they would calculate beidino Amri le, the court themselves summoned him. We continue with another qualification, v'lo amoron, and we don't say that we would turn to the neighbors or the woman and rely on them, elo de asi b'yayimei. That's only if he is coming back from being out of town that day. Avolo osi biyome, if he doesn't come back that day, lo, we're not going to rely on them. Amar, we calculate, we figure ishtaluye ishtali. They forgot their agency. So that the original halacha that we would rely on a woman or neighbors to summon an individual, and in the event that he doesn't show up, we would excommunicate him, is highly qualified. It's assuming that the summoned individual is not in town at that time, and that that summoned individual would be coming back the next day, and in coming back, he wouldn't be his home is not in the proximity or in the vicinity of the court, whereby he would pass by the court. So with all of those qualifications in mind, so we have a rather limited situation where we would rely on the woman or the neighbors to do this summoning. And the we also mentioned that it all would have to happen, his return to town would have to be basically that, by within that day, by, let's say maybe the next morning, but if more than that, if more time than that would lapse, you can't rely on the neighbors or the woman, because they may have forgotten the request for agency. Omar Rava, Hai man de kosav ale psicha. A person who is the subject of the psicha. The psicha was the document indicating excommunication. Al delo osi ladina. Why was he excommunicated? So a possibility might be because he doesn't come to court. Ad de osi ladina lo mekarino le. We will not rescind. We literally won't tear up that excommunication proclamation until he comes to court. Even though he may have said, I'm coming, that's not enough. That's not enough for us to tear up the excommunication. He has to actually come. There's another situation where a psicha might be written up, al delot sayas ladina. This is a person that came to court, he went through the court procedure, the court issued a ruling, but he doesn't cooperate with the ruling, doesn't listen. Rashi says, Adalo Tsayas Lebedino, Shomru Lo, they said, say Tain Lo, that's their final verdict. Velo Kayam, and he didn't fulfill the court order. So that's another situation where a psicha might be written up. Ad De Tsayas Lo Mekarinon Le. Until he listens, until he pays off the debt that the court ordered him to pay, we do not tear up the psicha. And on this point, though, the Gemara issues a rejection. So that we had Rava issuing his point of view, and the Gemara rejects the second point. Velohi kivan damar tsayasna karina le. Regarding that, the second point, once he says, I will cooperate, that's enough for us to rely on in order to tear up the psicha. The Rashi explains why do we express this leniency. Velohi, Rashi across from here says, Kivan diomar tsayas detat sayasna karana le'alter. Immediately we'll tear it up once he says, I'm going to pay up or I'm going to listen. The dilma lesle zuzi hashta v'torch. Maybe right now he doesn't have the money and he's going to trouble himself to find. Aval be'osaladina, however, with regard to the first point that Rava made, the psicha written up for someone who doesn't come to court initially, called kama de lo osi afgerusa hu. As long as he doesn't show up, he is a afgerusa, is an expression meaning chutzpah. And therefore, he's rebellious. And therefore, we don't relieve him of the excommunication until he actually shows up. Here we deal with the issue of setting up a time for showing up to court. Omar Rav Chisda, Kevin Zman. Rashi across from here says, Kevin Zman liyoyim sheni b'shabbos. We summon someone to show up on a Monday. Rashi goes on, Vim lo yovo mizamnin oisoy liyoyim chamishi. Vim lo yovo mizamnin oisoy liyoyim sheni. We referred to this earlier, that we summon someone, bays hey bays. Now let's see this in the Gemara. Omar Rav Chisda, Kevin Zman Sheni v'Chamishi v'Sheni. Zimna, v'zimna basar zimna, that is an expression meaning a particular time, and then another time following another time, as we just explained. Monday, and if he doesn't show up, we summon him to come on Thursday, and if he doesn't show up then, we summon him to come on the following Monday. And then, ulamachar kasvinon. And after that, we would write the psicha. Rav Asi ikla bei Rav Kahana. Choso hahi itso de azmino ledino befanyo. Rav Asi visited Rav Kahana. He saw a woman that was summoned to come to court in the evening. Ubet safra kosif ala psicha. And by the next morning, he wrote up a shtar shamta, an excommunication document. Amalei, so he asked, lo sover lo mor lo ha di amar of chizda kevin zman sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. What, you don't hold that you wait Monday, Thursday, and Monday? You summoned her the evening before, the previous afternoon, and on the next morning you're already excommunicating her. Amalei, so he answered, honey, mili, this need to wait Monday, Thursday, Monday, gavra, de onis v'leise b'masa. A man, here we're presenting what was generally the practice. Men sought their livelihood oftentimes out of town, and was beyond their, they weren't in control of their own time, so to speak. They had to be out of town, and we need to wait for them. We can't excommunicate them just on such an immediate basis. Avolitzo kevon de isa b'masa v'lo asya, a woman who was summoned to court, since she's in town and still doesn't come, moredes, she is rebellious. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei slash mivneh heading. In this case, we're using a house marking. Mosai umi ein mezamnen ledin. When and whom will we say that we don't summon to court? Now, I know that sounds a bit vague, but we will see in the Gemara certain times and certain individuals that we will not summon to court. And we speak about individuals, you'll see, given certain circumstances, we won't summon. Now the Gemara. Omar Rav Yuda. Lo yavino zimna. We don't summon a person to court. Lo b'yoyme nisan v'lo b'yoyme tishrei. We don't summon them to show up during the spring month, the spring season, which is the harvest time, and likewise during Tishrei, the fall month. These are times that people are, you can't expect them to abandon their crops. These are the times for Nisan is the time for the grain harvest, and Botzir, the grape harvest in the fall. Those are not times to summon people to show up in court. And lo b'male yom tova, nor on erev yom tov, the day before a holiday. V'lo b'male shabbat, nor on a Friday. Avol minisan lebaser yom nisan, ubiyom tishrei lebaser tishrei kavinon. However, to send a summons to someone during the Nisan or Tishrei season to show up after the harvest, the respective harvest seasons, that we will summon. So that during Yomei Nisan and Yomei Tishrei to show up during the actual harvest, no. But to send a summons and expect them to show up after that, yes. Mimali Shabbata Labosu Mali Shabbata Lo Kavinon. However, to send a summons on a Friday to show up after Shabbos, that we would not do. My time. Why not? Why not send a summons to someone on Friday? Bavidito de Shabbata Torin. He's preoccupied with getting ready for Shabbos. And he's not going to even note or pay attention or remember that he was summoned. Omar of Nachman, lo yavinon zimna, lo livnei kala bekala, velo livnei rigla berigla. Kala is an expression referring to public lectures. People would assemble on Shabbos for a public lecture. The court shall not send a summons to someone on Shabbos to people attending the public lecture, informing them to come on Monday to a court hearing. If that were done, people would not come to hear the public Torah drasha. Likewise, the B'nai Rigla is a reference to public lectures that were given concerning the topics of holidays 30 days before the holiday. So you don't summon people who come to these public lectures to show up in court, because if people were subject to court summons, they'll avoid coming to the lectures. Ki avu asu lekamei de Rav Nachman, when tovin, people who come to claim, people have outstanding debts that they want to collect, and they would approach Rav Nachman on the Yom Kala, on Shabbos, when they came to hear Rav Nachman's drasha. These Tovin, these claimers, would say to Rav Nachman, "Hey, you know, I want you to summon these people that owe us money, the Balei Din, the litigants to court." Omar Lahu, Rav Nachman would tell them, we'll call them the lenders, the debt collectors. He would tell them, "V'chi ledidchu kenu feichu? Do you think that I gathered together these people gathered together for you, for your convenience, for me to summon them to court for your purposes? They came together to hear my Shabbos lecture, my halacha lecture." However, v'idno dika ramoi chayshinan. But nowadays, there are tricksters, underhanded individuals that would take advantage of thinking that they're not going to be summoned because it's a public Torah lecture. We are choshesh that they're using the Torah lecture as a means of avoiding court summons, so we will summon them on the Shabbos or the holiday lecture. Im hoya davar sheyesh bo achrayas chayovin l'shalem. We spoke about a father having stolen something, and if the father left achrayas nechosin, if the item was consumed by the children, so they're not obligated to compensate. However, if the father left, if it's an item sheyesh bo achrayas, then the children have to repay. And we've discussed this issue earlier, and we pointed out that the expression dover sheyesh bo achrayas, even though in general it means land, in this case you'll see, as we've seen in the past, a different approach. Masni le Rebbe, the Reb Shimon Berei. Rebbe taught his son, Rebbe Shimon, lo dover sheyesh bo achrayas mamish. The obligation upon children to return isn't limited to a case where the father left land, actual land. Where the father stole a cow and it's being used for plowing, or a donkey that's used as a beast of burden. They have to return those items in order to preserve the honor and dignity of their father. Otherwise, this stolen cow or donkey, every time it's seen, people will remark, "That's the animal that was stolen by so and so," even though he's deceased. It's an insult to his name having this animal in their possession, in the possession of the children of that thief. So they must return it. Let's say the stolen item is a bed that they recline on, shulchan ve'uchel of, or a table that they eat on. Mahu, what is the din in In that case, do they have to return that? Omar lo, so Rav answered Rav Kahana, tein l'chocham v'yech kamot. He cited a posuk, but literally, give to the wise man and he'll increase his wisdom. But the Rashi explains that this is kipora v'chamor kein mito v'shulchan. Just like we were worried about the honor of their father with regard to the pora and the chamor, so too with regard to the stolen bed and table, they must return. So that after all is said and done, if you to just reflect back on what we learned in the Mishnah, if a father stole an item that's not identifiable with the owner of that item, then the children are not obligated to return. However, after all, they did not commit the theft. If, however, it's an item that is identified with the owner, so having it continue to be in the in their possession, in the possession of the children of the thief, that would promote the dishonor to their father, then they have to return. Needless to say that the details of an item that is still around, a stolen item that's still around in the possession of the heirs, that's not identified with the father, it's not identified with the owner, that is, that the children are not obligated to return. Why is that? That, of course, was the subject of our previous shir on daf, Kuf Yud Aleph. So, by all means, make reference to what we learned there concerning the issues of Yeush and Shinu Rishus and Yerushus Yerush Kirushus Lokeach. We're not going to go over all of that at this point. Before we conclude, let us remind you, if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.